There's a way, a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for another Atomic Show. I know it's been a while since I've put together one of these, but this one is going to be great. I have with me today five people who all spent a good deal of time in Bonn, Germany, for the 23rd Conference of the Parties. Those of you who don't know exactly what a COP is, it's an annual gathering of people who want to do something about climate change, international gathering seeking agreements to try to take action to address climate change. One of the things that many of us have recognized is that for some reason the nuclear question is a little bit difficult to share or a little bit difficult to address at a conference of the party. So with me I have people who decided to go and make sure that the nuclear story was being told and being heard, or maybe being told, and sometimes it's hard to hear when you have your fingers in your ears. With me today, I have Kirsty Gogan, who is the founder, a co-founder and director of Energy for Humanity, an NGO based in London, England. Ben Hurd, who is the founder of Bright New World, and a recently earned his PhD, so he's Dr. Ben now. I have Ila, and I can't pronounce Ila's last name.
Ida. Ruiz Halme is the last name.
How do you say your last name, Ila?
So it's Ida Ruiz Halme.
Ida Ruiz Halme. Oh, Ida, I'm sorry. Okay, Ida. And Ida was a representative at the COP party, a conference of the party. I'm not sure if you participated in the conga line, though.
I was, Eric got me a badge, so I got to go and see some of it, yes.
Oh, good. Okay, and Wolfgang Denk is also with Energy for Humanity, and works out of Zurich. And Eric Meyer, who is founder of Generation Atomic and serves as its executive director. So I think that's everybody. Welcome to you. And Kirsty's going to start off with a little description of the work that went on to bring people together at Bonn and to try to offer a new perspective.
Great. Oh, thanks so much, Rod, and hi to everybody. Here we are, this little plucky band of global environmental activists that, you know, just simply want to see all the tools at our disposal being deployed in the battle against climate change. And so we have all made efforts in recent years to ensure that nuclear energy is represented in the conversation at the COP climate meetings, particularly really starting with COP21 in Paris in 2015. And so this year, the COP was being hosted in Bonn in Germany, and the World Nuclear Association had applied to be a sponsor, a gold sponsor, no less, of the major side conference that sits alongside the climate negotiations. There's a big coming together of businesses and NGOs and organizations all focused on sustainability and climate. That it's a two-day conference. It's, you know, one of the world's biggest gatherings focused on sustainability, right next to the Global Climate Conference. And the World Nuclear Association was accepted initially as a gold sponsor of this event. It's called the Sustainable Innovation Forum. But then after some months passed, Climate Action, which are the conference organizers, came back and said that the United Nations Environment Programme, which sort of owns the Sustainable Innovation Forum, had rejected the World Nuclear Association for their sponsorship. So Climate Action, the conference organizers, obviously were presumably a little unhappy to lose a major sponsor, and they were trying to negotiate with UNEP to have some kind of lesser form of sponsorship agreed, which wouldn't give the World Nuclear Association the same kind of profile at the event, but it would at least allow them to at least host some kind of roundtable event. Climate Action went back to UNEP, and UNEP again vetoed any kind of presence from the World Nuclear Association at the Sustainable Innovation Forum, which meant that nuclear literally had no seat at the table for this event. Now, considering that nuclear energy is the second largest source of zero carbon power in the world and is the only proven, scalable way to transition from coal, as we've seen in countries like Sweden and Switzerland and France, that have successfully achieved a completely clean electricity generating mix, it's kind of extraordinary that the United Nations Environment Programme, that apparently has as its mission to provide leadership and encourage partnership in caring for the environment and so on and so on, completely rejected any kind of presence for nuclear energy at this event. Now, we're not apologists for nuclear energy. We're not, you know, representing the nuclear industry. But what we do, you know, nuclear energy has its problems, you know, not least high cost and low public confidence. But those reasons are all the more important. Those problems that nuclear energy faces in terms of scaling up to make a meaningful contribution to solving climate change make it all the more important why we should be insisting that nuclear energy comes to the table and explains how it's going to step up and make that meaningful contribution. And so between us, we decided to take action and do something about this. So I will hand over now to Ben Hurd, who was really involved in coming up with a plan for what we would do in Bonn.
Thank you, Kirsty. Hey, Rod, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I have myself on mute because I have this terrible tendency to breathe loudly. So I'm so it will take
it
me.
It was the excitement of Kirsty's narration.
Oh, that's true, but it's also the I have anyway. Never mind. I'm going to keep myself on mute. Okay. So if you address me, just give me a second to come off.
I'll take you off the spot right now. Yeah, thanks, Kirsty. You know what was sort of happening, Rod? You can imagine that as the sort of news of just what had been meted out to the World Nuclear Association was sinking in our community, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that among us there was really a lot of frustration and upset about that, and just how blatant it was. And it's something that we had been fearing when I was in Finland recently and speaking with Rowley and Eric. We could sort of see it coming. We could see that having a conference of parties in Germany at this time, when they're so aggressively trying to phase out their nuclear, is that it was probably going to be a really rough conference for the technology anyway. And then to have something so blatant come up in that way, it sort of galvanized, first of all, just a lot of energy. I think you can imagine of people being pretty cross about that. And then we really thought, okay, well, what are we going to do? And Eric and Generation Atomic knew that they were already going to have a presence. That Energy for Humanity similarly were intending to have a presence and take some action. And so, you know, I think it's a credit to all of us that on this occasion the conversation really quickly turned to how do we work together to make the most out of this, because there is evidently an effort going on to lock the technology out altogether. It's really going to be in our interest and in the interest of the issue that we all work together in a really strategic and cooperative way to make this happen. So the first thing we did was try to put some effort into our media response for the issue itself, which involved some conversations I was able to facilitate here in Australia. So the Australian newspaper broke the story at the global level. And fortunately, that did precipitate some clear response from the World Nuclear Association and no clear response from UNEP. And, you know, that's something that has carried through right up to this moment, is there really has been no explanation of what has gone on and why. And so once that was out there and safely in play, and there was some excellent follow-up from yourself, obviously, Rod, you know, promptly in Forbes, you know, we started realizing that we were all going to be there on the ground at about the same time. People, assets, if you like, who have belief in this issue, say, how can we come together and sort of sculpt a program and sculpt an approach that's going to work? And so you could say that we went for a sort of front of house, back of house approach, or a sort of a business and activism approach, where we kind of split up the resources and assets, with Kirsty and Wolfgang having a report to deliver, Eric and Ida doing a lot of stuff on the ground, out and, you know, tailing and trailing events. I touched down and promptly found myself putting stickers on bananas in a bit of a guerrilla move, which was, you know, I was a little tired, I'll be frank, but it was a lot of fun.
I'm sorry, and I got to break in here just a second. Are you calling it a banana communication, a guerrilla move? Come on.
Well, yeah, I probably should have called that one. Sorry. But people may have seen the photos from Twitter. You know, the Gen A guys had this terrific idea of getting, what was it, Eric? 200 bananas, I think we got. Is that?
All said and done, it was about 300.
Oh, there you go. 300 bananas that were put on my bed. So I had to get stickers on them all before I could get any sleep. That was pretty clever, actually. And then they put one on every single desk in the Bond Zone. So that, you know, the first message people got of a morning was to say, we're here. You know, there's been an attempt to lock this out, but we're here and we're around. So Ida and Eric moved around a lot on the street, tailing events. And myself and Taylor Stevenson from Generation Atomic sort of took the official end and tried to get permission, permits, venues to hold some counteraction. And all of us had a fairly universally consistent experience that we were not welcome. And it was pretty profound.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Ida, why don't you give us a little bit of the story that you wrote about on your blog, where you and Eric were on the streets.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. I'll just give a short introduction. I'm a biologist and a blogger, and I actually stumbled onto nuclear power because I was so concerned about climate change. And the reason I was at Bond at all was that I had just discovered Ben's organization, Bright New World, and I was reading testimonials. And there was Rowley, my Finnish eco-modernist friend and author of The Climate Gamble, who had said why he had given the reason why he's engaged, why he supports Bright New World, is that if we're going to do something, who's going to do it if not me? He was like, I'm doing this because I realized that if I want something done, you know, to explain to my kids for the future, why didn't I do anything? It's better to try to do something. So that inspired me into thinking that, hey, I can do something too. And then I realized that these people were all going to be at Bond to try to do something. So I joined them. I had no idea what to expect or what I could actually do. And Eric incredibly got me, it was all pretty last minute, so got me a badge. So I got to actually enter the meeting and so on. And while we were first, we went to the official zone for Eric to sing his nuclear opera, which is amazing. He sang it in the rain, not allowed inside the actual area. So we were filming and photographing him on the entrance to the Bula zone, singing his nuclear operas.
I'm just going to cut across you, Ida, and point out there that Eric was badged. He could get into that area.
Yes, yes, he but had, he was not allowed
permission to see that area.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And we'd gone through the official application process. You know, they're allowing other groups to come out and just chant, you know, about limiting warming to 1.5 or whatever it was. There's all sorts of other protests and official demonstrations happening in and around the zone. But then, you know, I go through the official application process. They take a look at what I'm doing, and they decide that the appropriate area to have me is in between the security zone and the entrance, out in the rain. So, I mean, that's it's just indicative of the conference's attempts to just marginalize us and at every turn.
So, Eric, was it raining hard enough to try to drown you out?
Never.
No, I was a little bit worried about the my speaker and the camera, but it's okay. It's the saying anyway.
The voice can't be drowned out, I'd say.
Can I just add one thing quickly? It's because although, you know, the conference is famously hostile to nuclear, you know, the COP events have, you know, made nuclear energy a taboo throughout the last 25 years of climate negotiations. And, you know, that's what we're up against here. At the same time, you know, Climate Action, which were the organizers of the UNEP piece of this, really were quite embarrassed about the fact that, you know, the WNA had been rejected. And when we then met them while we were in COP, we met the chief exec of Climate Action and some of his staff. And I think it's clear that they had lobbied quite hard for nuclear to be represented, because for them, it wasn't an ideological, theological position. For them, it just made sense. It's like, oh, here's another low carbon source of power, and we're doing a climate conference, so yeah, it makes sense. Whereas for UNEP, it clearly is this like deeply, you know, emotional, I would say theological position, which goes against all kind of rationality. And so appealing to Climate Action and to the sort of logic of it, and to almost to anybody, we should tell Rod a little bit about how it was when we were meeting people at the conference and how they responded when we told them that nuclear energy had been banned.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually great. We so we'll have to get back to Ida's confrontation in the street moment.
Sorry.
But
yeah.
When we, you know, when we were, we when we got around to the day when we actually got the opportunity to have conversations, it's probably a similar experience that everyone on this call has had, which is that once you are having conversations, it's a conversation people want to have. We had some incredibly productive conversations, particularly armed with Energy for Humanity's excellent climate leadership report for the year, which had such excellent visuals for what the contribution of nuclear was to achieving low carbon energy in Europe and just what it means in terms of actually moving up the leaderboard, if you like, in terms of who's doing what. These were extremely productive conversations, and that's always the way. I mean, normally there's a hunger, actually, at events like this for people to be able to have a good conversation about nuclear, and that sort of that theological gatekeeping is representative of actually a really small hardcore of what's running these events. It's really not, in my opinion, I don't know if others would agree with me, it's really not, in my opinion, representative of a lot of the people who are turning up. A lot of the people who are turning up to something called a Sustainable Innovation Forum would actually really like to have these conversations. And a lot of the conversations we had were outstanding. One I would mention in particular was some people who are really trying to push the value of enhanced use of hydrogen. In terms of what it can do to decarbonize steel production, or in terms of what it can do to make synthetic fuels, they understood very well how important it would be to be able to pair it with a reliable source of heat, such as could come from nuclear power. That's just one of the conversations that I had. So yeah, it's what UNEP did, in my opinion, was profoundly wrong, and also not at all representative of the people that were actually paying money to come to their event.
You know, yeah, Ben, I really...
Let me break in for a second. I'm going to come back to Ida just a second. But Ben or Christy, can you also put a number on exactly what WNA was ready and willing to contribute to the Sustainable Innovation Forum? And perhaps, you know, one of the, you mentioned the logical response of climate action, but as the organizers of the Sustainable Energy Forum or Sustainable Innovation Forum, you know, they're putting on a, they're businesses. They're putting on an event that costs a lot of money. How much was WNA going to spend?
The gold sponsorship value was $70,000 just underneath. Is that correct, Kirsty? That's my recollection.
Yeah, correct.
And what groups were, can you give a representative of the groups that were actually allowed to participate?
BMW. Well,
can I jump in here? Sorry to interrupt. This is Wolfgang. Hi. I actually ended up being inside the Sustainable Innovation Forum. And I had the feeling it's a conference with, they have enough money. I don't think the money was the issue. They had a lot of big sponsors. BMW was a sponsor, Eaton, like lots of huge corporations were sponsors of this conference. And what bothered me a little bit was that it's not the fact that they don't want to take the money or they don't want to let WNA sponsor. It's more like that nuclear was not a topic at all. It seems so hypocrite to talk about climate and excluding the one biggest scalable source. So that all made the whole conference look a little bit hypocrite in my opinion. And I actually asked a question also in the panel discussion whether 100% renewables is actually even the right goal. The participants of this panel discussion were not really answering the question. But I think this is the main question we should ask ourselves in these big climate conferences or sustainable energy conferences. We all have the goal of increasing renewables, and is that even the right goal if we want to help tackle climate change?
I agree with you, and now we'll go back to Ida and finish hearing about your adventures on the streets of Bonn.
Sure, I'm happy to continue. So what I want to say, actually, I thought that Ben made a great point about the fact that the organizers of the UNEP event were sort of a part of this small marginal group of people who really theologically rule nuclear out. And my first experience of talking to people in Bonn was when me and Eric left from Eric Singing in the Rain and went out deciding to get some lunch, and we walked straight into an anti-nuclear protest. It was right where the people get off their buses to go to the Bula zone of the conference, and there were maybe 50 or 100 people, maybe not quite 100, and a big zine. They had a really big stand and a really huge car with, you know, these yellow painted oil barrels for some reason with the nuclear radiation warning signs and stuff like this, and they were chanting about the horrors of nuclear. For whatever reason, you want to actually host an anti-nuclear protest when the conference is about, you know, coal and fossil fuels and carbon emissions is a good question to begin with. But yeah, it was Eric looking at me and said, you know, we have to go check it out. So we went right in and looked around and listened to what was happening, and were a little bit shocked at the vehemence of the message. And what we did was that we waited patiently while they had their chants and they had their fiery speeches, And last, there was a guy with the guitar singing about destruction is coming, it's ongoing, and really emotional, really vague, and really threatening messages. And then when they had wrapped up, Eric just jumped up on scene and said, "Film me," and started singing. Pretty incredible move. I mean, do you do that often, Eric?
not usually with such a potentially hostile crowd. No, that was the first time.
Yeah, that was a pretty gutsy move.
Yeah, well, it was gutsy for you to stand there and film me as well. but yeah, I think that the song that I sang might have been the perfect one because I don't actually say the word nuclear until about halfway through it. You know, I'm talking about how we all need to unite and how, you know, this is a critical time in the planet's history. You know, this is the moment when we all decide to fight as one for the Earth, and all this kind of thing. And it was kind of funny because this lady who had pretty much been at every anti-nuclear press conference, I'd seen her before and, you know, called into question their assertion that because of the mining of uranium, nuclear was on par with fossil fuels as far as carbon emissions. They stood up there at an official press conference stage and made the assertion that nuclear energy was as emitting as fossil fuels, and I called them to question on that. So she knew me and recognized me as the person who did that. And I think when I got up there and started singing for a few seconds, she thought that overnight I had converted to a anti-nuclear activist. And the timing couldn't have been better because just as she was saying, "Oh goodness, you've changed your mind, you've converted," the chorus started to begin, and as it was leading into the, you know, the famous Toreador song into the chorus, I was slowly unzipping my jacket to show my Atomkraft ja bitte, or Kernkraft ja bitte, button, showing my support for nuclear energy, and I, you know, started singing. I'll just give you a sample, I guess. I just started singing.
Please go for it.
Okay.
Nuclear power holds the key to universal prosperity. It is nuclear energy we must embrace for the human race. And if we build it, history will show it was the right way to go.
So, I love that part.
Yeah. Thank you. I have no idea how that, if my microphone could handle those. I tried to back up a little bit, but sorry if that was distorted at all. so I started singing that, and then by the end of the chorus, the second chorus on the repeat there, they had, you know, cut the microphone, and on my very last high note, or I'm holding it out, it was actually, the timing was almost perfect. Like I paid the DJ, they just started playing just a rock and dance beat right as I was finishing out these loudspeakers to try to drown me out.
Yeah. But quite a lot of people actually applauded your performance.
That's true. Yeah. Probably, I don't know what, 15 people were clapping and
yeah.
Do you guys have the recording of that interaction? I'd love to see that video.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I think is actually one of the pivotal moments is the moment when Eric took a bow and jumped down, and I'm still filming him. And then one of the men comes to us, and he looks like a really calm kind of guy usually, but he comes forward to Eric and he says, he's smiling and he says, "You should be really happy you're not being beaten. You should leave." And then at the same time, I'm still filming Eric while he comes to talk to Eric. So we have this on film as well. And then their organizer, their own anti-nuclear organizer, comes and tries to drag, you know, jerks my hand to get rid of the camera and tries to take the camera and tells me, yep. You have to give me the camera. You have to give me the camera. Yep. And starts harassing me. That's the point when it started getting hectic.
Right, right. I remember the conversation with that guy, and he just kept saying, like, nuclear kills people. And I'm just like, I know you've heard that, but, you know, I'm just trying to talk through him, just repeating that over and over again, which, I, you know, in retrospect, is totally futile because he was kind of in that fight or flight response where it's just everything was going through his amygdala. But I was saying, like, take a look at this information from the British medical journal Lancet. you know, tried to hand him a chart, and he's just like knocking it out of my hands and telling me, you know, nuclear kills people. And when I said British medical journal, he kind of took off on that for a while, and, you know, kind of is like, oh, you're a British lobbyist, you're British, and started yelling at me for being British.
No, I think that, I mean, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, it was the first time that I actually met people in real life who are so fanatically anti-nuclear. And I think, in a way, I couldn't believe that, you know, I can see them. They're people just like me. They care about the climate and they care about health. It just doesn't penetrate that. Surely they will listen. They see I'm just a normal person as well. If I go to them and talk about, like, can we talk about nuclear power? Can we look at the graphs and what do you say about these? But Eric handing out the little graphs with the information from IPCC and, you know, information about mining materials for our energy forms and so on, it seemed like it was a really inflammatory point. They really did not want to see what Eric was giving out. So that was when the most, you know, most shocking person came, this old man with white hair who had a sandwich in one of his hands. He started eating, and then he came with this sandwich in one hand and he started pushing Eric. And he just came and started pushing, like, bodily pushing his chest and pushing, shoving him.
Yep, and hitting my hands. I was just saying, I'm a peaceful protester, and I'm only bringing information, and we're, you know, I just want to have a discussion. And he's just calling me a fascist and like hitting my hands and shoving me. And he had like three people backing him up the whole time. And I got to say, Ida probably kind of saved me from being beaten up there. Just by, I don't know if it's because, you know, she's tough as nails or just the fact that she's a woman, or I don't know. But
I'm sure that helped, because, I mean, Eric was being pushed at least 30, 40 meters down the road by this guy. And his friends thought it was fine. Why stop him? You know, he's going. This Eric has his hands held up and just said, I'm peaceful, and he's keeps shoving. So when I joined him and asked the old guy if he was going to shove me too, then I think he was a bit hesitant, and he came and screamed in my face as well, fascist. So that was really like, that gave us the realization of the level of communication you can have with people who are so entrenched in their views. It's not a discussion. It's a confrontation, hopefully not with quite a lot of physical violence, but lots of hatred. Really, like, we were horrible fascists. He didn't know anything about us, but we came there and we said, hey, listen to this about nuclear power. It can do good things. And we immediately became the enemy, the horrible enemy. Two little people surrounded by tens and tens of anti-nuclear activists. And so I think maybe it was... they realized that when I was standing next to Eric and asking if he's going to shove me too, that they realized that it maybe might not be a good idea to have one of their own shoving a girl. And then they sort of came and said, yeah, you know, maybe calm down a bit, and took him to the side for a little while.
Yeah. I'm glad we got out of there in one piece and were able to keep the camera. Yes. Because, you know, during all this, some of the other anti-nuclear demonstrators had gone to get the police and had, you know, made a big story about how we're filming illegally and all that kind of thing. And we were able to talk our way out of that one, thankfully.
Yeah, because as soon as we got the shover off. And we tried to have a discussion with a woman who wasn't shoving, who was sort of shouting, but not shoving us. Then the police came. The organizer had got the police, and the police came to me and said, like, give us your camera. You have to show us your footage. Come with us, and we're going to look at your footage. And I was shocked enough. I mean, I'm from the Nordic countries, so I have quite a big trust in the system. And I was like, you know, I've done nothing wrong, so nothing bad can happen, which is probably a bit dangerous assumption. But I just said, you know, I haven't done anything wrong. I've filmed Eric. I'm not going to give you my camera. You have no right to take it. And at this point, Eric says, like, you know, there was a guy who was being pretty aggressive physically. Can you do something about this guy who was shoving me around? And then while the police comes, the other anti-nuclear activists were really smirking and they were starting to film me. So then Eric's like, okay, so if we were filming, but now they are filming, if just filming in a public place it gives you the right to take away the camera, can we see their camera and see what they have taken? And I think at that point the police went a little bit, they completely unheard anything we said, but then he settled down to taking my address and making threats about there's legal actions if I would put private information or private identifying information about anyone online. So it was sort of shocking to see that the police were completely on the side of the anti-nuclear, you know, protesters against two little people in a huge group of people who are clearly very angry at us. Yeah, the police thought it was appropriate to be angry at us.
Yeah. That was a crazy day. And just, I mean, just another example in that huge, huge line of ways in which we were kind of discriminated against and kind of bullied by the people that were there.
Well, you were you were disrupting the peaceful thoughts of them, of the people who know exactly what the right answer is. They really don't want to hear any challenge to that, right?
Right.
Yeah, I suppose it was that kind of discomfort that makes us, I don't know, that makes us other. If we say that, then we are not normal people who deserve to be treated nicely, sort of. And it's okay to be very, very rude.
Rod, I'm keen to point out that, you know, when you hear the description and you read Eater's article, and you can pretty quickly get a scale of the sort of protest that it was that they confronted and interrupted with their peaceful performance art. You know, it was something. And meanwhile, Taylor Stevenson and I were getting rebuffed everywhere with the prospect of sitting down and setting up some chairs and tables. You know, no one would consider giving us permission so that we could feel safe to simply sit down and talk to people. We didn't even have any signs. We certainly didn't have vehicles or, you know, enormous props. But we would have conversation after conversation, and as soon as Tay, who happens to speak very good German, would mention the magic words Kernkraft, you would literally see people's faces change in front of you. And suddenly there'd be grunting and and I don't know, and we couldn't get anywhere for anything. And including when we went to get this was actually before I hit the ground, so I won't take any credit here, but when Taylor was seeking the actual official permit from the city to have a presence so that they knew where we would be and what we were doing, he was given an answer, which may be a fair one, which is that they've just said no to everybody. There's just a blanket exclusion that there will be no street protest during the COP. And that was the response that we got. So quite how it is that several dozen people can show up with vehicles and speakers and big yellow props and be unaccosted while we were getting knockbacks from the foyers of museums. You know, it was just this sort of rolling experience day after day after day that was, I wouldn't necessarily say surprising because I actually think all of us were expecting it, but it was disheartening nonetheless. And it is one good reason why, you know, one thing we did that really was the right thing right throughout is that we took a lot of footage. There was a lot of documenting going on. And it was a lesson that I had from Adelaide recently when Jessica Lovering's talk in Adelaide was really rudely interrupted by a lot of people that just worked really, really hard to disrupt it. And we realized at the time that if we had documented that properly, it's no longer an advantage for them to do that. It's no longer an advantage for them to behave in that way, because we can show people just what it's like. And this time around, I think that that was something we did extremely well, and we needed to. I think thanks to some additional organization, particularly on Kirsty Gogan's part in Paris in 2015, we had more official avenues to participate. This time we really didn't. So, you know, Eric was always there with his camera, and also Frankie Fenton, a friend of ours from Paris, Irish filmmaker, touched down and joined us and trailed us with all of our efforts as well to make a really quite a professional production in future. And that, I think, was critical. It was a critical step, a step up, I think, for us to appreciate the seriousness of what we're doing and just how it's so important to get this story out so that other people can see and understand what's going on and what it's going to take to change it.
Definitely. If I can just make a short comment, because that is, we need to get that kind of image to the general public, because these people, like the organizers, the German organizers, the German anti-nuclear activists, even the police, were really, really like, you're up against the wall. They won't hear you. But when we talk to people, we talk to people on trains, on the street, outside the UNEP event, they were really interested. They were not putting in their fingers in the ears and like going the other direction when we mentioned nuclear. They were really interested, like, oh, really? Oh, wow. How is that? I thought it was really dangerous. I thought this, I thought that. And they were really willing to listen.
And that's why people are working so hard to keep us out, because they know that's what happens. They actually understand that people are really interested, and most people really are willing to listen. And that's why they're working so hard to keep those barriers up.
You know, I realize that there are people that maybe get offended when I make this comparison, but the way that you all were treated is really what happens when people of one sort or another have been demonized. You know, that gives those protesters the belief that they're doing somebody else's work. They're doing God's work, maybe, to push a pro-nuclear person down the street. You know, I know that in the internet world, it's the conversation ends when you bring up this comparison. But when was the last time that people were pushed down the street and branded and et cetera in Germany? You know, this is not necessarily a good thing for Germans to do. Of course, in the U.S., we have our own challenges. I'm reading an awful lot about the civil rights movement right now, and the techniques that you guys are talking about being shouted down or being just completely excluded from the conversation, is what happened in my area of the country, in the south of the U.S. during the segregation era, during the Jim Crow period, where, you know, you had to have separate water fountains or separate bathrooms or separate schools. You know, this is what happens when people demonize things. And oh, by the way, I'm also on a campaign to try to help my pro-nuclear folks recognize that demonizing coal may not be a good way to respond either. There are definitely things that are bad about coal and natural gas and oil and everything else, but demonizing and pretending or believing that you're doing God's work sometimes puts people into the wrong mode and really stops conversations. So I'll go on to Wolfgang. I haven't given you much of a chance to talk recently. Tell us a little bit about your experiences there.
Yeah, and I apologize in advance for my internet connection. I didn't manage to set it up that well, so I hope it's not too much on and off. But yeah, I was really excited about the enthusiastic crowd with Ben and Tay and Eric and Kirsty and everybody basically in Bonn. It was really, really great also to hang out in the evening in their Airbnb and think about what best to do. And it's such a pity that actually we even have to have this type of fighting going on, because I think the real thing should be to really fight against climate change and reduce the carbon emissions. And I think this drags so much energy out of getting there, and it's already such a big challenge that it's just, it makes me a bit sad that we have to even have this discussion with anti-nuclear activists. But it was during the whole 2 weeks, it was when there was not the subject nuclear was not brought up, it was really nice, the people were really nice and really good discussions. And as soon as people noticed, like, oh, you guys are pro-nuclear, so then things started to get a bit awkward. And I actually, or we experienced also, we presented a document at the COP23 Climate Leadership, European Climate Leadership Report 2017, where we tried to drill down into the data a little bit to see which countries are doing well and which countries are doing not so well in progress for climate. And really, like, independently of technology, we try to look at the data, and there's some really interesting results. But it shows that the data is very clear that the goal of increasing a high share of renewables, there is no correlation to success in reducing carbon emissions. So most countries that do well are countries that support hydro and renewables and nuclear. So these things are, that was something that we noticed, and we were trying to, all in all, I must say I have mixed feelings with the Bonn conference, but being on the same side as Ben and Eric, and was great. And yeah, I don't know what else to say right now.
Well, I'll just say that the morale was incredibly important. You know, if I don't, I'm me, I don't live a life where I'm typically on the receiving end of discrimination. You know, things are all generally pretty nice. But this was a difficult week. And so the fact that we were coming together as a team and we were having some laughs and keeping each other's spirits up and comparing stories, you know, we were all going out and having quite difficult days. That was really, really, it's more than just a nice thing. It's actually really essential. You know, if you don't have some emotional support in this game, it can feel really, really hard and really lonely. And so, that again, I think was something that worked out really well this year. And Rod, on that coal point, you know, we went out to visit the coal mines that RWE is running, ironically, just like a 35-minute drive from where the whole world is sitting down to speak grand words about climate change. There's the biggest hole in the ground for a lignite mine. And it's not closing or winding up or winding down. It's expanding. You know, it's only sort of half finished, and it's going to keep going for another 20 years or so. And it's 450 meters deep. And having my job and being in Australia, I've seen some coal mines before, so I'm a little used to the scale. But this was really big. But I was with Tay and Frankie, and they weren't really used to it. They hadn't really seen anything like it before, and they really struggled at first just with what they were taking in with their eyes. And I did try to make the point when we were there that do be dumbfounded by this, do be amazed by this. Don't necessarily be outraged by it, because what you're looking at here is energy. This is it. This is the scale of how much energy is consumed to have a country like Germany run a standard of living like it runs with the sort of industry that it operates. It's got to come from somewhere. And what makes nuclear so incredible is how we can get that amount of energy with such a lower impact on the world. But making coal out to be only the enemy is belying its Janus-like nature. You know, it has been the engine of industry to date, you know, that has delivered so much for so many people that have benefited from it. And now it's time to transition away and into something better. You know, so it's, I think, you know, having the conference in Germany was risky with this coal mine, because there was a forest that was under threat, and there were people that were saying, you know, as soon as the international community leaves, they're going to come and chop this forest down. They won't do it while everyone's here watching, but as soon as we leave, they're going to come and cut this forest down. And sure enough, this week, the court decision came through that, yes, indeed, this forest will cut down to give way for the coal mine. So it was just a bewildering week of experiences in terms of what the meaning of the event was, and then what was actually happening both on the ground and in the countryside around the conference. It was, I don't know what the rest of you think, but just sort of the general, it was like a sensory and intellectual clash and contradiction all week long. It was really quite powerful.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ben. You know, this is the strange kind of contradiction with the reality in terms of, you know, what the evidence tells us about, you know, how we're doing in terms of actually reducing emissions, which we're not. I mean, at COP23, there was an announcement that after a 3-year pause, carbon emissions have actually started rising again. So all of our efforts, you know, successfully raising, you know, public support, political support for taking action on climate change over the past 2 decades has achieved basically nothing in terms of really making a dent on the upward trajectory of carbon emissions.
Okay, Christy, give me a second. Yep. Wolfgang, I think that you're not on mute, and Ben, maybe you can mute, because I'm hearing a lot of background noise while Christy's talking. Okay, all right, thanks. Go ahead, Christy.
Oh, thanks. So I was just going to say that this, you know, that the findings in our report that Wolfgang was describing shows that, you know, Germany is the largest emitter of carbon emissions in Europe, emitting just on its own 18% of total greenhouse gas emissions. It is failing to meet its climate targets, and despite having spent billions every single year on subsidies for mainly for wind and solar, it's not decarbonizing at anything close to the same rate as many other countries in Europe. We found that those countries, as Wolfgang said, that have a combination of nuclear and renewables have already achieved the goal of a clean electricity generating mix. And those countries, you know, could now start really focusing on their wider decarbonization efforts to, you know, tackle transport and heat and industry, because it's not all about the power sector. But to be in Germany, you know, which is often sort of seen as being, or certainly presented as being, a climate leader, and to see the things that Ben was describing in terms of the, you know, horrific coal mining that's going on for lignite coal, the worst kind of coal, and just the total, you know, hypocrisy at the heart of that, really is quite shocking.
Yes, it is shocking. It is hypocritical, and it is pointing out that things are not going in the right direction when the cleanest source is the one that's being physically excluded. Where do we go from here? Wolfgang, you mentioned that you and Christy, I guess Energy for Humanity, have done some touring in Europe and maybe even screening other documentaries. What kind of things are we doing to change this perception?
Maybe I can start. So what we noticed with our report when we handed it out, a lot of the data is actually is official data. We also worked with Electricity Map, so we both both had official data from Eurostat for Europe and also electricity map data, and they're available. The thing, though, is that people don't seem to look at them. So many were surprised to see that how big of a margin Germany is the largest total emitter of CO2, for example, or these kind of things. So I think what we really want to do with Energy for Humanity is continue to sort of draw attention to the official data and maybe present them in a different way so that people see what's really going on. And we had some promising talks with somebody from the Middle East. They were interested in having something similar for Middle East and Northern Africa, maybe Asia, to do such a climate report. I think that could be very, very interesting. We just need to come up with some funding for that. And we try to make such products that we made for this conference to draw attention to the fact that we need all the available sources if we want to decarbonize. And actually, nuclear power is somewhat as a silver bullet when it comes to fast decarbonization.
Ida, you mentioned that you're very new to the pro-nuclear world. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've discovered in the last few months?
Well, I have sort of had this anti-nuclear mindset from the get-go, from when I was a teenager and when I was a young adult. And it's sort of been a gradual process of having some good friends who have pointed out to me some things are not so black and white, and having the opportunity to think that, okay, maybe there's actually some wiggle room, maybe some of those things are not as bad as I've heard about it. And the most amazing thing to me is really that almost whichever side of the topic I've looked at, like for me, very important in the beginning was waste, and then how to get rid of it, and reading about new nuclear technologies was a big thing for me. And then realizing that actually my fear of the waste was, even after I had sort of started learning more about it, was the fear doesn't go away just because you read once that actually it's not as dangerous. So it takes a long time to process. And the more I've had these kinds of bits of information come in, and I've read more studies, and I've seen more data of comparisons of what is actually more dangerous, this or that energy form, or this or that kind of emissions, it's always left me astonished at what I used to believe and what the evidence actually points to. And it's come from all over. It's from the waste, and now in the recent the most recent thing is about both how fast we can build it. As you said, Wolfgang, it's almost a silver bullet. It's the fastest way of decarbonization we have. The other thing has been how I always believe that, yes, it's really expensive, so that's a minus, sort of. And that's what I've been looking at lately. And it's incredible that actually when you look at all the different sides of the costs, you can see that nuclear is actually almost always the cheapest low carbon energy source. It depends a little bit on the regulatory burden of the country, and of course then in practice it depends on subsidies and it depends on lots of things. But if you factor in, there's been these reports on levelized costs of energy sources, and it's not a secret. You can actually find this data, and it's not very hard. And it turns out that this too is a bit of a myth. It's not like it's the horrible expensive energy form. It's one which the old tech has a very big investment cost initially, but then it goes on for a whole lifetime, basically. So there's just so many areas where there's so many myths, and you have to go through all of them. It's even for me personally, it's a long journey. So then to get out that to people, it takes a lot of messages, and takes different medias of messaging and so on. So for me, it was great to meet up in Bonn to actually get to work with all these people who have also become really passionate, and see how dedicated they are. I mean, Ben and Eric in that Airbnb with, you know, I don't know, three beds and seven people sleeping in them, using towels for blankets because they weren't enough. I mean,
I'm not sure. I've blocked that out, Ida, so you'll have to remind me.
Yeah, I at some point I laughed at him. I said, you know, I have a wonderful hotel room. I had actually booked, you know, one bed hotel room for myself. So I was in a luxury, and they almost threw me out. How dare you? It was, you know, everybody has traveled from all over the world to be there, to be able to make some kind of difference. So I really, really, I was really appreciative, or really a lot of respect to both Bright New World and Generation Atomic and Energy for Humanity for being there and showing, you know, maybe this way we can get in more people, show that we're actually doing something. We're coming together.
Absolutely, and I'm gonna speak for on behalf of at least Eric Meyer and myself, Rod. It was just such a pleasure to have Ida come and join us. You know, to have that feeling of someone new making the journey to come and put in and to come and contribute. Someone that I had just begun to get to know online. She was just an absolutely wonderful inclusion for what we were doing, and committed and passionate and her blogging has been terrific. You know, that's been such a fantastic communication tool that's taken the pressure off some of the rest of us that allowed us to get on with doing some of the other tasks. And that's, for me, you know, that's what a movement looks like, and that's the difference between success and failure. You know, effective movements are virtually defined by the fact that they're succeeding and making a difference. And it's something that's taken us a few years to come to grips with, which is how do we actually act and behave and conduct ourselves like an effective movement? And Ida's decision to come and participate in the way in which she participated, I think was, you know, for me, a really powerful symbol of us beginning to get some of that right. So I'm glad, Ida, to hear that you were glad to be there. We were definitely glad to have you.
I was really, really happy. I think that just getting this message out to more people about what, you know, seeing very, very smart, very dedicated, very honest, very humble people putting their little resources into doing this, and you realize that, hey, even if you were never interested in nuclear before, you realize that there's probably something in this. These people are really dedicated to getting it out there. It was really a pleasure. I was really happy that I managed to come there.
I was certainly glad to have you in my foxhole.
What?
I think it was the day I met you, actually, when we were getting accosted from those anti-nuke folks.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead, Rod.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that part of the reason I'm doing this today is I want to try to get this word more widely spread, and also to remind all of us that making sure that there is a face, that there is something besides white-haired dudes in dark suits and ties that are promoting the fact that nuclear technologies, nuclear energy, really is something new and different. It's the only new source of energy that we've discovered in the last several hundred years. And it does have potential to do so much good for humanity. And, you know, putting a human face on that message and getting out there, and even if you're being stiff-armed by the established powers, you are opening people's minds and getting people to think. And hopefully, you know, next year there may be half a dozen B&Bs or Airbnbs with you know, nuclear advocates stacked up like cordwood. But we've got to keep pushing this forward.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Rod. And I hope that the audience will be pleased to hear that coming out of this experience, all of us have had interactions, made connections, and got information that is going to enable us to come back better and stronger next year. I mean, as it is, I think we did a tremendous job at relatively short notice. And now we feel like we have started something that we can and will follow through on at the next Conference of Parties. We, as I say, have had some really, really interesting conversations before, during, and after, which we can't really discuss here. But it's given us some really good ideas for just what the potential is now. And, you know, one experience I had, and I think I was particularly persuaded when Eric Meyer actually fronted up to Eric Solheim, the head of UNEP. You know, that he's a senior man in the United Nations, and our Eric met his Eric face to face and challenged him. And you know what? Eric Solheim didn't really have a lot to say. He didn't really have a strong stand. And I think that was really telling that when we actually stump up and do a little bit of hard work, this opposition is relatively weak. And I don't want to sound mean or cruel, but I'm going to use the word cowardly. It's not really a very brave opposition. And with a little bit of clever work, we can do a heck of a lot. And so heading to Poland next year, I think that's going to be a really powerful opportunity for us to do a whole lot more and to follow through on what we began this year. So I'd certainly encourage any and all Atomic Show listeners. You know, there are four organizations represented here today. Energy for Humanity, Generation Atomic, Mothers for Nuclear, and Bright New World, to please come on board and sort of join up, sign up, be a part of what we're doing, because I really think that this was just, you know, one more step in the journey that was perhaps started in Paris, and we will keep going, and I think we learned a lot, and we can do more and better next time.
I definitely think so too. I've already started thinking about Airbnbs for Poland.
Wonderful. Can I have four beds this time instead of three?
Yeah, I think that's great, Ben and Ida. And, you know, just to really second that and say that, you know, it was really morale boosting and important to have all of our organizations collaborating and working together. Because we're thinly spread. I mean, Rod, we're speaking to you from all corners of the world here, in all kinds of time zones. Big shout out to Ben in particular, who's in the middle of the night. And you know, to come together and work together in person really helps give us sort of strength to kind of continue our work back home. And I think, you know, it's mobilized and motivated all of us to think about how we can have a much greater presence next year. And I'll certainly welcome lots more people to join our ranks. And Ida, it was amazing to have you. And, you know, just, yeah, thank you so much for the wonderful blogs. I really encourage all your listeners, Rod, to go and find Ida's blog, Thoughtscapism, which does offer a great account, quite exhilarating read of some of those adventures that we had.
Thanks so much, Kirsty. I was really blown away by your presence, actually. I thought we need to get all the people to listen to you, because you have such a wonderful calm and demanding presence without being loud or without being demanding. I've really enjoyed meeting you.
Amazing. Well,
you know, I'm going to take this opportunity to offer this up to those who are listening to this show that say, what can I do right now? Anybody who wants to donate to these groups and say, you know, give them a donation to save up for next year, to make it so that they have more resources and can maybe host more people and get more conversations going. You know, think about that. You know, think about how you can, and I'll put links in the show notes that go along with this to each of the organizations. And when you send your donation, maybe even identify it for COP24, which is going to be held in Poland next year. We really do need to capture the attention of those who put together these massive worldwide events and say, if you really want a solution don't eliminate some of the best tools that are available. And I'm getting right now down to the time to wrap this, because people start to lose attention after an hour and a half or so. Actually, it's been an hour and 15 minutes. I'll offer each of you the opportunity, and some of you have kind of already done it, with some closing thoughts and some thoughts about where to go from here.
Yeah, well, I'll come in first on that one, Rod. Thank you very much. I don't know. I think my closing thoughts is this works. I think that, funnily enough, we might have persuaded ourselves over time that this was impossible or this was intractable, and it isn't. We made some serious inroads this year using all the tools at our disposal and with everyone working to their respective strengths, and that's what an effective movement is. This works. So, you know, I would really second what you suggested. If there's any listeners that want to participate, we've all got web pages, we've all got Facebook pages. And, yeah, if you want to send an earmarked donation, you know, it will go in the jar and we will plan it together over the course of this year to make that impact bigger and stronger next time. So I would just reinforce that, you know, becoming a movement is how we make change. That was a really strong takeaway for me this year. And the fact that just a little bit of bravery, particularly the sort that Eric and Ida showed, it's amazing how rare real courage actually is out there in the world. And if we are the people that turn up with the real courage, we get noticed, we make a difference.
It's beautiful, Ben. I guess what I would add is that, you know, I think we've talked a lot about the moments where maybe it seemed like we weren't making progress, right? When we were, you know, fought back and in particularly aggressive ways or had our voices stifled. But there were hundreds of conversations that were happening inside the booth and on the streets. I'm thinking of one in particular. Our Nuclear for Climate booth was actually right next to a Danish anti-nuclear organization, and my first conversation got the guy to go from we should shut all nuclear power down tomorrow to maybe we should keep them running as a bridge technology. And then, you know, I tapped out, and my partner Taylor Stevenson went in there and got the guy to agree that, you know, maybe if there is a small modular reactor that can be used in distributed generation and is cheaper to manufacture and ship places, then we could have a conversation about nuclear. And then a few days later, I talked to this guy at 100% renewable event, and he came up to me and said, you know, hey, like, I appreciate you sharing all that with me. Also check out this wind turbine that requires slightly less materials than the ones I was talking to you about the day before. And that's really just a small example, a microcosm of what happened throughout that. And I think the larger conversations that many of your listeners are having with their people in their community is we're making progress. And I think we're going to make progress even faster this year and at the climate talks next year. So I'm thrilled that I got to participate in this with everybody and got to learn from them. I'm looking forward to another amazing year of advocacy in 2018.
Great. What I was thinking about as my finishing thoughts were really what Ben said earlier, that the people, the organizers and the instances that were anti-nuclear were so desperately trying to keep people from listening, because they realized that if they do get the chance to listen and look at the data, they are actually interested. And the data is really convincing. I think a great example of that was actually what we forgot to go into, was when we were at the UNEP Sustainable Innovation Forum event. And we talked to people outside and they were really interested. And we had a bunch of the reports, European leadership reports by Kirsty and Wolfgang. And we went to the entrance of the event and there were four or five of us friendly chatting to people and asking if they're interested in the in the European climate leadership report and handing them over and having discussions about the situation in Europe with some of them. And the organizers really quickly got really unhappy. And they came out and they saw us handing out information about how's it going with carbon emissions in Europe. And they say, you really have to leave now. We're not okay with you standing here. If you continue giving out reports, we will have the security, you know, kick you out. So the Sustainable Innovation Forum didn't want people looking at the actual information about carbon emissions. They rather, you know, want to kick us out than give them that chance. You know, me and Kirsty, little women standing there smiling and talking about carbon emissions. Apparently that's not okay for the Sustainable Innovation Forum. So I think a lot of people disagree. So if we just get the message out, if we get some of those gatekeepers, we pass them, we show people what blatant ways there are of people trying to stop the discussion from even happening, and we start having the discussion with more and more people, they will be interested in listening. And that's really the great thing. I mean, you can only have so many people who have these fanatic stances. Most of them are just don't know. We just have to get the information out there. I'm really happy and glad about everybody's ways, different ways, really great efforts in doing that. So I'm also super excited, and I'm really looking forward to going to Poland next year and meeting you everybody again and everything that we can do during the year before that. Thanks a lot.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, so Rod, I would just very quickly say that I think that, you know, I agree with everything everyone has said. I'm really looking forward to, you know, building this up over the course of the next year. And it would be really interesting to kind of benchmark this moment. So thank you for convening us to share this, you know, to share these memories with you and your listeners. And, you know, hopefully this will provide a little moment for us to kind of look back and be able to see how far we've come in a year from now. Because I really think that we're pushing at an open door here. Let's go. Let's do this.
Yeah, thank you so much. Maybe.
So I think we'll end it with that. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. I was wondering if I should say something, because Kirsty summed it up so nicely. Maybe the only thing I would like to add also is that, thanks so much, Rod, for all your blogs and also your contributions at Forbes. I think that really, really helps for people who are not so much in the subject to also get a different viewpoint. And it's really, I think it all comes down to people making up their minds themselves and noticing like, hey, maybe it's different, maybe I was wrong. And these are the most powerful voices later on if people change their own minds. So I would really like to thank you, Rod. I have been reading all of your Forbes texts and blogs, and it's really great what you're doing. And I'm looking forward to the next year.
Well, I guess I'll have to take this opportunity to make an announcement. I have separated ways from Forbes. The editors at Forbes were getting a little bit miffed at my insistence that I would not label people who oppose nuclear energy as, quote, environmental groups. They actually got to the point where they changed the words on my most recent piece from anti-nuclear groups to environmental groups. So I said, you know, I'm sorry, I can't call them environmentalists if they're fighting a clean energy source. So with that, we parted ways. So I will be continuing to write, be focusing more on producing original material at Atomic Insights, where the editor there is much more willing to let me say whatever I want to say.
He's a heck of a guy.
I don't know why. I guess it's... So, you know, it really got a little bit distressing to have Somebody tell me that I need to treat people's fears about nuclear that they quote have legitimate concerns, and I'm supposed to treat them fairly and find out, you know, and report on what their concerns are, even though I think that they're illegitimate concerns, particularly when it comes from groups like Environmental Defense Fund, which is an organization with so much money that they have 7 executives getting paid more than $300K a year, and they collect about $135 million a year to do things like oppose nuclear energy and to tell people that we should not support higher prices for nuclear power plants, or at least sustainable prices for nuclear power plants, and they should be shut down so that we could have more cheap gas, which people don't seem to understand that if everybody's burning gas, it will no longer be cheap. It's just the law of supply and demand. So thank you all for doing the work you're doing. Continue on. I'll do as much as I can to keep cheerleading it and sharing the information with more and more people. Again, I want to have a larger contingent next year, because the more human faces that we put on this technology, and the more people that we have like Ida and Kirsty and Ben and Eric and Wolfgang, calmly sharing why they think nuclear is worthwhile, the better we'll be. So thank you all for attending, and I hope you listeners enjoyed
this. Thanks, Rod. Thanks
so much, Rod.
Thank you,
Rod. Appreciate it.
There's a way, such a better way today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adams way.